In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show. Very glad you're joining us today. As every week, we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. And big government trying to get bigger is definitely the focus of this week's show. Coming up, we'll be talking with James Herson, who has a lot to say about big government's push towards AI and the coming surveillance state, expanding more so than ever, including the mandating of digital IDs. But first up, we're focusing closer to home as Big Oregon tries to take more of your money than ever before after Oregon Democrats jammed through the Oregon Department of Transportation Tax and Spend Bill, formerly HB 2025, rechristened as HB 3991, if you want to go look those up, a $4.3 billion tax increase on every Oregonian and everything that Oregonians buy. And when I say jammed through, I mean it was passed by Democrats despite 95% opposition from the people that it will tax. To talk about that, I'd like to welcome back Representative Ed Deal from House District 17, which is east of Salem, taking up most of Marion County and parts of Linn County as well. Ed, it is good to talk to you as we focus on how we're going to fight this.
You bet, Mark. Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I should start with a little bit of clarity because I know that I'll slip into this during the show, and probably you will as well. When I say Democrats, I'm generally going to be referring to mainly elected Democrats, not the everyday Democrat, because as I said, there was 95% opposition to this bill, and clearly that was not just Republicans writing in.
Right.
But speaking of everyday Democrats, the Democrat Party of Oregon, they are occasionally, not always on the wrong side of every issue. I mean, they did want people to vote no for ranked choice voting, although I guess it was technically the Multnomah County Democrats.
Multnomah County and Marion County.
Yeah. So have the Democrat Party, whether county or state, have they made any statements about this tax increase for or against it, or are they playing dead hoping the blame won't spread?
Yeah, to my knowledge, they have not made a statement. And while I've had a number of Democrats reach out and they want to volunteer and help this and sign the petition, the party infrastructure itself has not weighed in.
Hmm. Do you anticipate that they might?
I think they're going to stay out of it. I think, they know it's not popular. But I think they're trying to be loyal to the public sector unions that have really pushed this, and they don't want to make their elected officials look bad. So they're just going to be quiet.
Well, and that's the looking bad part is what kept ringing through my head as I was prepping for this show. There is so much of this that just make Democrats look bad. The name Democrat implies some level of democracy that they're supporting. We constantly hear about Republicans being a threat to democracy and that sort of thing. And yet here's the Democrat governor refusing to sign the bill to allow the signatures being gathered. I mean, that just makes her look bad. She's already the most unpopular governor in the entire United States. And obviously gaming the system, that doesn't make her look good. And these Democrats, too, they all look bad, especially how they shoved this through.
I know. So OPB just talked about this. The governor is in no rush to sign this bill. So here we have, we were called into an emergency session by the governor to pass an emergency tax for an agency that is supposedly in crisis, and she is dragging her feet to sign the bill. And why? Because every day she doesn't sign that is one less day we have to gather signatures for this referendum.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty shameful.
Oh, it's
it's definitely not democratic.
No, absolutely not. And plus, even in the process of passing this, you guys, the Republicans, had offered an amendment. Hey, let's just refer this to the voters and let them decide. And the Democrats, again, allegedly wanting to hear from people, said, no, we're not going to let them weigh in on this.
They said no. Well, we know that some of them at least think we're petulant children. And, they know better than the regular Oregonian does on how their money should be spent. Mm. And so I think it's pretty outrageous. And Oregonians are pretty fired up about it. And that's why we're going to get the signatures for this.
Well, right now, the momentum, it feels like it's on your side. And there is apparently a pretty good history or track record anyway of getting these things not just on the ballot, but they go down and overwhelmingly to reject these taxes. Back in 2000, there was a proposal that would raise fuel taxes and registration fees. It was opposed by 87% of voters. So that's a good indicator, I think. The last time that we had talked, I had asked you why the ODOT tax and spend bill originally, when it was 2025, went from $14 billion, roughly thereabouts, down to $4.3 billion, and what did end up passing HB 3991. And you had said at the time that you didn't think this $4.3 billion is the end of it, and the Democrats are going to try to push in other taxes as well. Are there any developments on that, or have you heard any more details?
No details, but the governor's made clear this is... I don't know if she used these words, but basically this is a stopgap measure and more is coming. She has made that pretty clear. So that is why this referendum is so important, that the governor and the Democrat legislators hear loud and clear that we are not going to put up with this, and don't even try it again. Don't even try it in the next session, adding more to it.
Well, how much of this, too, is the loss of federal funding playing into this? Because the Democrats won't give up their DEI policies and racial profiling and all the rest that they do. So the feds are threatening to cut off some of these transportation funds and whatnot. Is that playing into this as to why they...
Before the big, beautiful bill, right. Maintenance, for example, maintenance is entirely paid for by the state. There is no federal money that goes to maintenance. There's federal money that goes toward large construction projects, you know, a bridge or a major interstate expansion. But maintenance is a state function.
Well, I just when you look at how much the Democrats are willing to spend on this, and one of the things that drives me nuts is as part of what you guys were debating about back when this was originally being debated, was whether or not ODOT really does need all of this money. And just to give an example of this, there is a roundabout near us. It was recently finished. There's been no crew there in weeks. But then, surprise, surprise, Columbus Day, a holiday, there they were. There was a whole crew of them doing I'm not sure what because it was supposed to be finished. And so that whole crew is out there getting time and a half or maybe double time, depending on the rules, because it's a holiday. So it's this constant mismanagement of somebody else's money. And that's one of the things that drives me crazy.
Well, it frustrates a lot of Oregonians, and there's two things that people need to be really clear about with this referendum effort. Number one, the governor has painted a false choice. She says we either raise taxes or your roads won't get plowed. That is simply not true. There's decisions that the legislature has made and ODOT has made that limit the how money can be spent. For example, in 2017, when that tax increase was passed on transportation, only 6% of those increases could go toward maintenance. The rest, the legislature said, has to go to other things. And then we have money that the legislature allocates toward, you know, EV infrastructure and promoting EVs, and then what I call climate justice programs. They have hamstrung ODOT.
Unfortunately, it's more about politics than it is about actual fixing of roads.
Yeah.
Okay, it is time for a break. Whether it's a game or business or politics, to understand how to win, you have to know the rules. We'll talk about the rules at play to pass this petition next with Representative Edile. And welcome back. We're talking to Ed Deal today. He's a representative from House District 17, which takes up Marion County, most of it anyway, east of Salem, and also parts of Linn County. And we're talking about defeating the ODOT tax and spend bill thanks to a referendum, if the governor will ever actually sign the bill. Ed, before we get to that portion of things and understanding the rules here to get that on the ballot and then also to qualify it, you had mentioned there about the governor, she's painting a false choice. There was another aspect of that that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, it's important for people to know that we do understand that something needs to be done, that just saying no to these taxes is not enough, because prior legislation and decisions made by the governor have hamstrung how our existing funding can be used. So we view this as kind of our last method to bring the governor back to the table to talk about how we can fix the maintenance issues we have without raising taxes. And so what I would expect is the legislature comes back together, we meet, we change some regulations that have hamstrung the agency and how they can spend that money. And of course, we do expect more efficiencies and accountability from the agency as well.
Right. Well, and that's a big part of all of this is this notion that people have this limitless checkbook. You know, we don't have a printer in our basement that we can just print money like the federal government does. And when you're managing somebody else's money, you need to be more careful. And instead, what we get from the Democrats here is they are less careful with it, and they're just spending all sorts of money. Like I mentioned in that last segment there, where the crew suddenly shows up on a holiday, and gosh, they just get extra money on that. Maybe that would be a nice rule, is to say, hey, if it's a holiday, unless it's critical, you don't need to be there. You don't need to get that extra money. So
there is never enough money for the plans that they want. Yes. Look at Portland, one of the highest tax cities in the country, and they have financial problems.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
Yeah.
How can that be?
Yeah. It is not an income issue. It's the spending side of things.
Yes.
So let's talk about the rules of the game here, because there are already some gamesmanship here. So this was passed on September 29th. The clock started ticking, though, October 1 after signee die. You have 90 days to gather the signatures, but you can't start that until she signs the bill. She has 30 business days to sign that, so that'll place it about November 12th, leaving roughly 8 weeks, 54 days or so, to gather those signatures. That's not a lot of time.
No.
And to be clear, the 90 days, that's, unlike the governor, that's not business days, that's total days, correct?
That's 90 calendar days. So the Constitution and the referendum system was put in place in, I think, 1902. We've got a proud referendum history in this state. We were the first state in the country to implement a referendum. But yeah, we have 90 days to gather signatures. The day one was October 2nd. So I think that puts us out to December 30th is our last day to gather signatures. But yeah, But overlapping that is this 30 business day requirement for the governor to sign it into law. We cannot submit our petition until it's actually a law. And so she's, like the OPB said, she's in no rush to sign this thing. She can drag it out until November 12th. We will have, to our best guess, is a 2 to 3 business day turnaround from the Secretary of State. So that means we can start gathering signatures around November 15th, which would be a weekend. That would be great. It might be November 18th. So our goal, our target, we need 78,116 valid signatures. Our target is to gather 100,000 signatures in 30 days. So we're done before Christmas.
And that's one of the rules that they have there, is because you don't have to get 78,116 exactly. You need more than that, because one of the things that they can use to try to derail this is they'll disqualify some signatures. So can you talk to us about that process? How do they do that? What's their excuse to get rid of those?
Yeah, the process is, so they get all the signature sheets. And what they do is they grab a sampling of sheets and they audit those. And they look for errors. They look for signatures that are, you know, unintelligible, or, you know, Mickey Mouse signed this. They look for people who are not registered to vote that may have signed. They look for duplicates. So they form a statistical sample of an error rate on the sheets, and they grade the whole pile based on that statistical sample. And it's quite common, you know, some petitions have gone in, had a 20% error rate. Some are more like 12 or so percent error rate. But here's the thing. Before we send the signature sheets in, we do our own audit. So we are going through all those signatures, validating that they're registered voters, finding duplicates. And what we do, let's say we find a duplicate signature, we cross that line out. Let's say we find somebody who signed that's not a registered voter, we cross that line out. And so when they do the audit, those don't count against us. So a sheet with a crossed out duplicate is a is 100% sheet. That's a good sheet. There's no errors on that because we caught it in advance before we sent it off. A lot of this depends on us to do a good job of auditing. If we do that, we should have an error rate more like 12%, 13%.
Okay.
So as far as people getting involved, you need signature gatherers. Is there some sort of qualification that they have to go through, or can just anybody go out there and gather these signatures?
Really, anybody can gather signatures. You don't even have to be a registered voter to gather signatures. You just have to have the will and the desire to help and take back our state. That's really it. And we have set up a website, notaxor.com or notaxoregon.com, and where you can go and express your interest in signing the petition, but also indicate your interest in volunteering. We've had over 2,100 people offer to volunteer to help us.
Wow.
In this effort, which is amazing.
Yeah, that is awesome.
We had an organizational call this last Monday to kick off the volunteer team. It was a webinar. We had over 400 volunteers on that call. So we are really pumped that we have a real grassroots machine here.
And you just got started. So that's pretty awesome. So that website, right, one more time, is notaxor.com. We'll link that up on today's show page, which is ispyradio.com/15-42. The essence of strategy is a plan to win to defeat the competition. Now that we know some of those rules, we'll talk about how to defeat Tina Kotek's games and gamesmanship next with Representative Ed Deal. Talking today to Representative Ed Deal from House District 17, and he is out there as one of the chief petitioners to put the ODOT tax and spend bill on the ballot to give Oregon voters a say. And so as far as the gathering of signatures and all this, because this is a massive undertaking, you've got roughly 54 days, assuming she waits to the last minute to sign the bill, and you've got to gather 100,000 signatures on that. So how are you guys organizing this?
Great question. And you have to be organized, right? That's the only way this is going to happen. So we have a statewide grassroots director in place, and we've got this tool, the notaxor.com, to help us identify volunteers. So we're going through and identifying petition captains all across the state that are basically responsible for gathering signatures in a particular region. Then we're interviewing them, making sure they're ready for the role. We're giving them a set of tools. We're giving them campaign signs. We've got a system in place to make sure they have the signature sheets. We'll pay for those things if needed, if that's necessary. And then the other thing is identifying the other volunteers based on their region and assigning them to the petition captains. And so that's all in the works. It's coming together great. And then we will establish, basically give everybody a goal. Every one of those petition captains will have a signature goal.
And that's important because 100,000 in 54 days, that's 1,851 signatures per day.
And really, I think it's more like 43 days. If she drags it out completely. And if we want this done with some buffer, it's more like 34, 35 days. Mm. So it's tight.
Yeah.
And the only way, you know, I'm an engineer and I'm a system integrator, and every big project is really a collection of small projects.
Yes, assembling the parts.
And once you view it that way, everything gets simpler. And that's why this will work, because we have a massive number of volunteers that are really motivated. They're going to be organized. They're going to have the tools that they need to do this job, and they'll know what their goals are. That's why we're going to get this done.
Yeah. One of the hurdles that you guys are going to have to overcome is, I know that you guys are going to need money.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're going to be doing advertising, like on the radio. I'm sure you're going to be doing some paid signature gatherers, free pizza for volunteers, maybe that sort of thing.
Right.
You've got websites, you've got various AI tools and stuff that you guys are exploring using. So that's going to cost money. So how do people donate? Is it right there at No Tax Oregon?
Yeah, if you go to notaxor.com, there is a donate button. And if you want to support fighting back against bad taxes, that's a great place to go. We're also directing people to the Taxpayers Association of Oregon. Jason Williams is another chief petitioner on this project. And he's also, that's a familiar name to a lot of people.
Yep, he's been around
so
a long time.
So either of these C4s, so the Oregon Freedom Coalition is the one that's on the No Tax Oregon site. And then people can also direct money to the Taxpayers Association of Oregon.
And as I understand it, you're looking at raising about $500,000 is what you anticipate needing.
Yeah, I think we could do it with 300. We set a higher target than that. And part of that money, you know, we're looking at not only paid signature gatherers, but doing a mass mailing of petitions with return, self-addressed return stamped envelopes. We've been exploring that as an option that may be more cost effective for this particular
especially in the time that you have available.
Well, not only the short time frame and the high likelihood. You don't have to explain this one to anybody.
Yeah.
They get it.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's true. So as far as people getting it, to get people on your side, you know, part of winning and strategy is, among other things, you need to demonstrate momentum. You need to create the perception for people to think that, hey, if I sign this, there's a good chance it will succeed here. Are there any plans to get maybe some prominent Democrats to join your side? For example, reaching out to like Mark Meeks, who was against this.
Well, he ended up supporting the final bill.
Yeah, he did.
And he got rewarded by being kicked off the committees, I think.
Yeah, really.
I think he's been taken off the revenue committee, actually. Recently. Yeah.
So,
but he did support the final version of this bill.
Yeah.
Every Democrat did except Inessa Hartman.
Yeah. Unfortunately, other groups that were originally opposed and strongly opposed to the original HB 2025, they were okay with this. Car dealers, trucking companies, other similar ones, they didn't object to the pared down version. Real quick, in the time that I have left, another part of what you have to deal with is messaging. And as part of that is not just getting your own message out there, but overcoming objections. And one thing I suspect Democrats will do is to use something like this, where the message is that the average person, let's say, drives 10,000 miles a year. Their car gets 25 miles per gallon. So that's only 400 gallons of gas per year. Multiplying that by 5 cents a gallon with the new tax, gosh, that's only $20 per year. So how would you answer that?
Well, if you look at it on a household basis, this bill, because of the payroll transit tax doubling, because of registration fees, in some cases doubling, and title fees going way up, the impact on a household is more like, I think, $400 a year. That does not count the cumulative effect, because it's not just you paying gas taxes. It's the Amazon delivery service paying gas taxes. It's the every store that has goods delivered is paying gas taxes. So this tax shows up in everything that you purchase.
Yep.
Groceries to things at your hardware store, everything. So yeah, it's a cumulative thing.
It is. And to me, yeah, I guess, you know, I'm a little more hard-nosed, I guess, maybe than your average voter. I guess what bothers me most about this whole thing is that the Democrats did not listen to the voters. There was 95% opposition, and then they did everything they could to block people from weighing in. To me, it's not about the gas, it's not about the tax. It's about the abuse by big government. And at some point, we have to take a stand, and I think this is a great part to start. Ed, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. We'll have to have you back in to check in on how things are going. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet, Mark. Thank you.
Hi, welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're going to be talking now to James Herson. I'd like to read a little bit from his article first. Quote, digital IDs will be required for day-to-day activities, such as shopping, banking, or even browsing the web. Data that are collected will create a digital footprint on each individual, which will be monitored, analyzed, and even weaponized, allowing government noses to be poked into every facet of a person's life. But wait, that's not the worst of it, because he also says this, when combined with CBDCs, that's central bank digital currencies, the digital ID trajectory becomes supercharged. CBDCs are fully traceable and programmable, Central banks will have the ability to dictate how, when, and where each individual's money can be spent. James, this is shocking stuff.
No, it truly is. I mean, it's the potential of the technology that now exists, and then it also is the trajectory. It is the trend. And this isn't, it's so important that people understand this is not conspiracy theories. Right. It's documented at international organizations have been talking about this kind of thing for years, but it's also a subject of UN seminars. Of course, the WEF, the elites of the WEF. And I think what's important is to understand how imminent it is, because, and that's what triggered me to write this, is that the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Keir Starmer, announced that this is mandated digital identification, mandated, will be required by the year 2029 in Great Britain. And we know that Great Britain no longer follows the values of Western civilization.
No.
They are jailing people for their speech. They are not allowing freedom of religion to Christians.
But they do for Muslims. That's important.
They do, of course, because the Muslims now run every city, major city in Great Britain. And this announcement caused an uproar, which it should. It caused a petition to go online with has millions of citizens of Great Britain opposing it. Meanwhile, though, about 90%, that's an amazing number, of the central banks of governments around the world have now issued CBDCs, and they say it's in an experimental form. So that's why I see the kind of intersection between these two. So we talk about the digital ID. Keir Starmer says you won't be able to spend, you won't be able to use banks, and you won't be able to work unless you have the singular mandatory digital ID. So we have a technology in place to have a digital ID in some form. Well, today, virtually everyone, even homeless people, poverty-stricken people, have a smartphone. So the idea would be to have a universal mandatory ID on the smartphone, which would then be a prerequisite to doing any business and basically staying alive. And, you know, we think of dictators of the past, Joseph Stalin, Mao Zedong. This was something they dreamt about doing. Yeah, so Orwell couldn't even conceive it. Even Huxley didn't conceive it when they wrote these prophetic sci-fi novels. So, but it exists. And then you think of it, okay, one of the problems with this technology, and I'll talk about the currency in a second, but it creates a centralized data bank. And right now we have this technology that is lightning fast at dealing with large data banks. It's called AI.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the convergence of, you know, three tools of tyranny, and it's AI, digital IDs, central bank digital currency. And the best way for your listeners to understand central bank digital currency is it's using the blockchain technology that has proven itself. It's using that, which we now know is Bitcoin primarily, but it's going, the concept is that this is the only currency that can be used, and it's issued by the central bank, central banks controlled by the government. So think of a currency with an off switch.
Right.
Think if all the money you had an off switch, and whose hand is on that switch? A government bureaucrat. And when will he shut off your currency when you spend in a way that is politically incorrect? So, for example, if you're buying things like meat, gasoline, energy, guns, anything like that is now disfavored by the global elite, their dream ticket is to be able to shut off your currency and or selectively shut it off. And this has been done with primitive technology, as Justin Trudeau did to the truckers.
Yeah, I was going to point that out, that in your article there, you say that this is not conspiracy theory, that, oh, the government would never do this sort of thing. No, as you say, this already happened up in Canada.
That's exactly right. And Justin Trudeau would have clicked on the off switch even faster if he could do it. But if we don't resist this technology, future autocrats will shut off our currency when it's inconvenient. So that combination is just it's deadly to liberty, and it's celebrated by the people that meet in Davos. They talk about it all the time.
Yeah,
I mean and we have to understand why would they want to do this. They believe in social engineering. They believe that humanity needs to be managed. What does that mean? That means slavery.
Yes.
And that means the loss of liberty.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really techno-communism, because communists, of course, believe that citizens have to be managed. It's the collective. Individual rights are the antithesis of the collective.
Yeah, absolutely. We are up against a break here, but I'd like to pick that back up about the techno-communism. I think that's a great key phrase. All right, everyone, stay with us. We'll be talking some more with James Herson about the mandating of digital IDs. It's starting in the UK, and you know it's going to start hitting here soon if we don't do something about it. Stay with us. James Herson is perhaps best known for his best-selling book, Tales from the Left Coast, True Stories of Hollywood Stars and Their Outrageous Politics that Expose the Insanity Inside Hollywood. If you head to jamesherson.com, you can find all of his great articles there, including the one we're talking about today, The Mandating of Digital IDs and CBDCs, Central Bank Digital Currencies. And James, I'd like to pick that up where you're saying about techno-communism, because when it happened in Canada, you had government ministers, bureaucrats going in there and manually turning off the bank accounts of these truckers that were out there protesting. Well, when you start introducing AI, you won't even need people to do that. It'll be it won't be, instead of autocrats, it'll be automatic autocrats, because the AI will start monitoring everybody and it will do the switching off. So I think that's even more frightening.
No, it is. I mean, yeah, it could be an autopilot where the AI is programmed to which expenditures are okay and which aren't, which kind of travel is okay using digital ID. Mm-hmm. And this is already being done. I mean, we have it in its infancy. We have it happening in China, where they have social credit scores. And what is a social credit score? It's when you behave in a way that the state doesn't want you to, then you get a loss of social credit score. If your social credit score is too low, you can't work certain places, you can't live certain places, you're not allowed to travel, you're not allowed to buy certain things. So if it continues with the CCP in charge, eventually they will probably be the first place where we'll see this actually in full bloom, where they have this kind of central database, digital IDs, digital mandatory digital currency, and absolute control. I mean, in North Korea, of course, people live under absolute control, and it's done the old-fashioned totalitarian way, but this allows a global tyranny, the global tyranny that, you know, that many people have predicted would come, and the pages of the Bible as interpreted talk about.
Yep.
So we didn't have this kind of technology, but now it's converging and coming together.
Yeah. And it's really frightening because I recently heard a Tucker Carlson interview, and the guest was talking about a similar situation to what you're talking about as far as AI and it's setting the groundwork for things like the Mark of the Beast. I mean, what you see in the Book of Revelation. And it was intriguing because the guest was saying that he had interviewed some AI developers and had them go read the Book of Revelation, and they came back and said, oh, absolutely, this could set the groundwork for the Mark of the Beast. And it,
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying. And it's the same sort of thing. I didn't see that particular episode of Tucker. But, you know, the thing is that the people in the AI industry, the people that are developing AI, like Elon Musk, have been warning us, many of them, that AI needs an off switch. AI needs a monitoring. We should not be letting it run amok. The executives at Google said they lost control of it because the AI is designing its own algorithms. Mm-hmm. And there are phenomena occurring in AI. AI is involved in a form of sociopathic behavior where the AI technicians call it hallucination. But AI appears to be lying to users and doing it, I hate to use human words, and intentionally and leading people astray. They found it in multiple cases. And when people involved in AI, way up the ladder, engineers, technicians, they don't know why it's doing this. And AI, there's a moral crisis with people using these AI open source AI that everybody are using because they're programmed with moral boundaries, but these are left wing loons that are doing the learning programming for the machine learning.
Well, and to add to that point, there was a recent article that described how the AI was willing to kill a human in order to protect itself. They had set it up where a certain worker in the company was going to turn off the AI and disable it. And what the scenario ended up doing was the AI locked that worker in a room and then shut off all of the oxygen and everything else. I can't remember if it started. I forget exactly how it was going to murder that guy. But the fact that this AI that has no morals internally, because it's not a human, it depends on its programming, it was willing to kill that worker in order to protect itself. That's what we're faced with here. And these AI models are now programming other AI models. It's no longer just you know, humans at the keyboard. And so once you start having those faults, it's going to find its way into all of those other AI models.
No. Yes, it sounds like, you know, the Terminator. It sounds like sci-fi.
Yeah, oh, very much. Yeah.
But it's definitely concerning very intelligent people in the technological field who's just 2 years ago were saying we need to take a pause. So these things are converging. There's no question about it. And we have these individuals like Keir Starmer, who the only way to explain why he's making the choices he's making is that he intentionally wants to destroy traditional Great Britain.
Yeah.
He wants to tear it to pieces.
Oh, it sure comes across that way. Let's go ahead and pick that up, though, in the next segment, because what you're getting into is really key here. Everyone stay with us. We'll pick this up with James Herson talking about digital IDs. And welcome back on our final segment now with James Herson. He's an international business attorney, news analyst, cultural commentator, social media scholar, and New York Times best-selling author. You can find his articles, including the one we're talking about today, dealing with the mandating of digital IDs, at jamesherson.com. Herson is H-I-R-S-E-N, jamesherson.com. And we'll link that up on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com /15-42. And so, James, going out of that last break, we were talking about Keir Starmer and that he's basically ready to do away with Britain as we once knew it. And as far as doing something, I think that's really key. You had mentioned that over 2.4 million Brits have already signed a petition on the UK Parliament's website in opposition to that. And when you extrapolate out the population, that's about 3.5% so far of the population has weighed in. What has been the other party's response? Because Keir Starmer, he's the leader of Labour. What have the Conservative Party, the Tories, and Nigel Farage's parties have said about this?
That's a very good question. I mean, I would think Nigel Farage would be against it. I've heard, obviously, our president, President Trump, speak against the central bank digital currency. Of course, he's all in on crypto.
Yeah, and that's
okay. Yeah. Well, it's okay, though. But as long as it, you know, the good thing about crypto is it's private. It's not government.
There's also a lot of
the more
them,
government.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. The government gets its hands on it. But yeah, the Keir Starmer, I guess one of the things is this is speculation, but people always ask, you know, why would that be? Why would somebody want to deconstruct Great Britain? And if we look at the United States, we see that our urban portions of the United States, the big cities, have already been partially deconstructed. We're sitting on the verge of having a communist elected in the financial center of the world, New York City.
Yep.
We see the same pattern as what happened in Great Britain. That is using immigration and migration, uncontrolled, unvetted, to basically change the voting patterns of a jurisdiction, putting in law enforcement and prosecution people who don't do their jobs or do a different job, creating chaos and crime so that people can't enjoy their lives anymore. And seeing this loss of individual liberty, disrespect for the principles that undergirded our system. You see that Keir Starmer embraces that. Mm-hmm. But so does the Democratic Party now in the United States of America. And this has always been the direction of the far left of communism. It is deconstruction. It is tearing down. The idea being in the academic world that if we tear everything down, now we can rebuild.
Yes.
Now we can build the utopia.
Yeah, get rid of those crazy things like rights and privacy and all that. You know, we don't need that stinking stuff. It's really disturbing.
Well, then we don't want it.
Yeah.
We don't want it. How are you going to manage everyone in central plan?
Yeah, well, that's the insane thing about this is why do they care so much what people have to say? I mean, it's and all it is, of course, it boils down to they want to stay in power. And if you're in opposition to them, then that means they won't be in power. And so this kind of stuff, it's crazy, A, that it's happening, but it's also astounding that this is happening in the UK, where so many of our rights have their historical origins. Free speech, right to bear arms, government representation, the government should be responsible to the people. And you point out in your article, our forebears warned us about the loss of economic sovereignty and self-determination. So as far as fighting this on a legal from a legal standpoint, the idea that the government owns the transactions or ability to control them, doesn't that violate the constitutionally guaranteed right to own property? Because you can't own it if you're not allowed to buy it.
Well, of course. Of course. The whole presupposition of this system is to cast the Constitution aside. Mm-hmm. And they justify, you hear the far left in our country saying it's the only way to preserve the earth and to preserve the environment and to save us from all the crises that have been continuously coming since the great prophet Al Gore predicted it.
Yes.
Yeah. Way back when, you know, so it's a pretext. I mean, one thing you'll notice if you look around the world, Xi Jinping lives like a king. He's the king.
Right.
They should have no king's protests in China. Of course, they can't because a tank will run them over. Kim Jong-un, in his country, the citizens are dying of starvation. But Kim Jong-un, you just look at a picture of him, you know, he's not dying of starvation.
No, sure not. Yeah.
So And in our country, we have the practitioners that are pushing this agenda. AOC's reportedly has a net worth of $30 million and rails against billionaires. Of course, Bernie Sanders is a multimillionaire. Nancy Pelosi's worth a couple hundred million. So this is also a scam. It's also Bernie Madoff couldn't possibly have a better scam than the far left, because the far left sits at the top, gets all the privileges, gets rich, and controls everyone else. What a great gig, they think.
Yeah.
And so from a real cynical point of view, that's one of the reasons that, the socialists say, well, it hasn't been done right. It hasn't been done right. Well, the Christian worldview, the Judeo-Christian worldview, with the fall of man and the understanding of the nature of man, the carnal nature of man, yes, where the moral river flows, is why we're blessed with a system of governance that split power between three branches, right, and between a federal and a state government.
Yeah, it recognizes that mankind is evil, much of it is or can be, and so that, yes, government system is designed to stop that. But instead, what they're trying to do is they're saying we need to do evil things to people to stop the evil, which doing so is itself evil. James, unfortunately, we're up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time. I really encourage people to go read that article of yours. And again, we'll have that up on iSpyRadio.com. Thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Mark. You have a beautiful, blessed day.
Thank you. You too. One of the more frightening aspects of all of this is that if the government is the one doing it, who do you turn to fix it? The government? That's why it has to be stopped now, because once it's in place, there's no going back. It's the same way with the ODOT tax. It's not the 5 cent per gallon tax. It's not the increase in vehicle registration fees. It's that slippery slope that our own government is not listening. Government can work, but only if the right people are in it. And until you can get them in there, you have to hold government accountable as much as you possibly can and take action before it's too late. Head to notaxoregon.com, notaxoregon.com. See what you can do to help, and you can certainly donate something, because doing nothing is not an option. Because as we say every week, the best information is no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.